Hi, this is Matt Groening. For those of you following along in your DVD booklets, this is episode 1F17, Lisa's Rival, first broadcast September 11th, 1994.
Hi, this is Mark Kirkland. I was the director on this episode. Just one notable thing that I want to mention, we had the Northridge earthquake right while we were animating this episode.
September 11th and the Northridge earthquake in the very first 2 seconds, and this is going to be fun.
Yay!
This is Dan Castellaneta. I'm an actor. I do some of the voices.
Keep it down.
That was Dan Castellaneta, who does the voice of Homer, among about 80 others, the one and only. This is Yardley Smith, and I do the voice of Lisa.
That's not Lisa. There's Lisa.
Wow, that's cool. This is Dave Merkin, executive producer and showrunner.
And this is Mike Scully. I'm producer, there I am, and writer of this episode. Although the story came from a story that was left by Conan O'Brien.
O'Brien had this idea originally.
Whatever happened to him?
He's not doing too well. But I don't think we took much besides the idea, and then sort of we structured it from there. But it was a great idea, the idea that somebody would really compete with Lisa and actually be better than Lisa. And Mike, was this your first script?
This was my very first script. I was terrified.
You did a wonderful job. It came out real nice.
It did. I remember this was the first time I really felt Lisa's pain in a way that I'd never felt it before. Like, it was bad enough that she didn't have, that her father doesn't understand her and that she doesn't have any friends, but now suddenly she has this kid who's younger than her and better at everything, and I thought, this is going to crush her soul.
And it was fun to crush your soul, by the way. That was quite enjoyable.
I was a bit worried about her. But with the help of Bart, she seems to come out okay.
Don't give it away. She may die. I swear. Don't stop watching. She may not survive.
Oh, sweet Lisa Simpson. So how did you... The rival is played by
Winona Ryder. The lovely, wonderful Winona Ryder. And I'll tell you...
She steals the show.
Oh, geez. See, I thought we were going to... All this legal... No, everything she took has been returned. I want to say that, okay? Because I don't like taking pot shots at people. No, she was absolutely lovely. And I have to say that as child actors go... Winona has done okay compared to many of the child actors.
Indeed.
And to all your parents out there, it's one of the most abusive, horrible things you can do to a kid is to make them a child actor. But if they're cute, I want to use them, okay? So please bring them. It's worth it for a couple of laughs in a sitcom. Yeah, but the fact that she made it through this, in fairly good shape is great. And she was lovely on the show. I loved directing her. She was a huge fan of the show. She had a great time doing it. That's right. That's her right there. And she had just finished doing the Scorsese film with Michelle Pfeiffer, what's the name?
The Age of Innocence.
The Age of Innocence. And she gave us a lot of stories about that. And all the guys on the show were crazy about her.
Yeah.
And I never had so many of the writers show up at the record with their faces pressed against the window. Yeah. Her and Adam West. And they both got a huge amount of dates with our staff, both her and Adam West. So it was very good.
And was there significance to her name? Her character's name is Allison Taylor.
Yeah, the character's name came from two of my daughters. I have five daughters, and so I was shamelessly trying to shoehorn their names into the show. So Allison and Taylor.
Good job.
And, so the other three daughters are totally traumatized?
Right?
Well, yeah. No, I think they actually wrote the show.
The idiot showrunner that I was, I thought, oh, he's sucking up to me because my girlfriend's name was Allison, and I love James Taylor. I had no idea what his girls were called, so he got me.
And I love the song Allison by Elvis Costello.
That's
I need a new Taylor. So.
And a girl that just pushed Lisa down, and Lisa said, hi, Sarah. Sarah is one of my other daughters. So that was three down in the first episode.
Good job,
yes.
Mike.
Later on, my daughter Erin came into an episode... a girl that befriends Lisa, and my daughter Lauren, I believe, is one of Cletus's children.
Well, now there's a dubious distinction.
Yes, one of his 175
kids. Save it for those episodes. I mean, we don't need to hear that now, do we? I mean, this B story is actually from George Meyer, and our good friend and longtime Simpsons writer. This is one of the oddest, I think, B stories in the history of any story, period. where Homer finds all this sugar. But this is a good example of the disturbed mind of George Meyer and the way he thinks. The idea that George would actually think that a 500 pounds of sugar is kind of exciting is exactly why we love him.
I was blown away in the room when we were breaking this story, and George pitched so many beats of this sugar story off the top of his head, and I was just frantically writing it all down. So.
Well, Mark said that was talking about that this was the episode that when he was directing when the earthquake happened.
Yeah.
What did that do to your drawing?
Well, it was a jolting experience, and it hit our animation building, and we were condemned, basically. And the directors, I'm not the only director who went through this, because we all had an episode in production at the time, and happened in the middle of the night. And so we all went to work the next day to find that our building was taped off. It took about a day, but they gave us, each director was allowed 20 minutes in the building.
Oh my God.
And I had to wear a hard hat. And then I had to go in, and the cubicles were flipped over. There were drawings all over the place.
I remember, you know, they obviously, as the showrunner, they called me, and they said, you know, this has happened. And I remember, you know, having to lead, and I said, it doesn't matter who dies, we have to get these cartoons out.
You see what and goes that into was the... making these cartoons, folks.
So we gathered up the drawings, and we were in another building for about a year. As well, at this time, there were a lot of people working at home on kitchen tables to get this done, and we had runners that would run to someone's house.
There's a coffee stain on one of them.
Now, I believe Yardley and Winona Ryder did their own saxophone playing here, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I was going to say, actually, in deference to who I believe plays the sax for Lisa, a guy named Terry Harrington, to ask if anybody knows if he played it for both characters.
I don't know.
Yes, it was one saxophone player for both characters, but I don't know who it was. I believe he was buried in the Northridge quake, just as we were recording.
David, you are
You can hear him dark. Kind of scream at the last solo.
Yeah, we left that in because it was funny. You know, it was... this actually, you know, we try not to talk specifically, but this is one of my favorite jokes of all time. The fact that there's... a dream that then becomes reality. So basically do the scene twice. And what's different is there's nothing different between the dream and the reality.
Right?
I love to explain the jokes. Just, you know, as I said, for any idiots out there that don't understand.
And I actually remember in the room you pitched this specific, the moment of Largo yelling, and this is not a dream.
I remember you saying that. I remember. A lot of times I can't remember what people wrote, but there are always moments that you remember saying something, and yeah, it's visceral. But, you know, the earthquake was really tough on us, too, because it just sucked a lot of comedy out of the room. It was a very, very traumatic experience, that earthquake, for everybody.
Had to go home and see if their houses were still there.
You know, it was intense. My I really thought that we were going to die and my house was going to come down and everything. And it was so obvious not to come to work that day. And no Simpsons writer came to work the day after the earthquake. The earthquake happened at 4:30 in the morning, so nobody came to work except Oakley and Weinstein show up, pencils ready to go, you know, walking over bodies going, we got to write comedy. So they were the guys that trudged through. And,
that's great.
And then they sat around for about 40 minutes till they realized that no one else was going to show up, and they went home.
What a marvelous idea. What's that, Mother? I'm just talking to the sugar man. Mother, I'm a big boy. I can do as I wish. Excuse me. Thanks a lot, Simpson. Now I'm grounded.
Well, I was very ill-prepared for the earthquake, except I did have a small battery-operated TV. So I sat in bed for the rest of the morning after the earthquake, watching the local news, which was totally inept. Because it was the only people who could get, you know, make it all the way to the TV studios could get on the air. So it was like janitors and stuff talking about how their closet doors were stuck. It was great. It was really, really good. I highly recommend get your battery-operated TV for the next major earthquake. Great entertainment.
I think it actually caused the production to slip back a week, did it not?
Yeah, we lost some time, and we had to make it up, and it was intense in general. That whole period around there, there was about 6 months around the earthquake that was, you know, that was very interesting to work through, and you get kind of happy that you could work through it.
Dan, did you do a Homer shriek when the earthquake happened?
No, I just remember going, oh, it's an earthquake. I wasn't even going to get out of bed. I was like, oh, it's an earthquake. And then I was like, wow, this is a really bad one. I couldn't think of. Next
year. We pretty much have them all the time in California, and they're not bad. You're used to them. And this started just like that, and then it turned into hell. And you really thought it was going to kill you. And then when you heard it was only a 6.8, I remember being very annoyed at that because it felt like it was an 8 plus. You know, it was so violent.
At least an 8.2. That's what I felt.
When we had those aftershocks while we were animating, suddenly everyone in the animation building that we were in, we would get up and run outside because...
That's what you would do, yeah.
So we had a lot of interruptions in this episode.
Did it make you color outside the lines?
No. We don't do the color here.
You don't do any of the color here?
We picked the colors here, and it was... At this time, these are hand-painted cells, and those were done in Korea.
So what do you do here, then? You do the key drawings here, but what does that mean exactly?
All the creative stuff, basically. All the movements, all the acting.
The tradition with animation is... and I mean from Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse and all those other trademarked great characters. Pencil on paper is how we do it. And
they duplicate that exactly and color it in?
Yes, they would Xerox our drawings and the cleanup drawings onto cells and paint them on the back.
No way.
Obviously a reference to The Fugitive here. Yeah. And I believe the line is right from The Fugitive, my glasses. I think that's that also comes from the film.
I actually watched the episode last night with one of my kids, and I hadn't seen it since the first airing. And when that part came up, I could tell she was totally blank. And I was suddenly saying, well, there was once this movie called The Fugitive.
Oh, no.
It was like I was talking about Birth of a Nation.
Based on a TV show that was once on.
Yes.
Now, whose house is that?
That's Allison's house, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I have to say, Yardley, you do such a wonderful job in this show, you know, struggling with...
Yeah.
And the thing that was interesting about the writing, you know, and the way the story was set up, the way Mike wrote it, the way we wanted to do the story, was the struggling against the hatred of someone like this. And the fact that it was very important not to make Allison a bad person, but just someone who was... And Lisa's struggle with that is absolutely hilarious, and it all comes through in your voice, which... Mark will attest to the voice is so influential on his drawings of the acting.
Always.
Yeah.
I mean, when we animate, each animator has a little playback tape player right next to him, and we're constantly listening to the tape and trying to imagine what that looks like. But we pull that. There are beats noted in the script, which we hit, but the rest of it comes from you guys.
Well, also, the great thing about Lisa's character, I mean, and using it in this story, is that the character, she's constantly searching for someone that she has something in common with, and she finally meets who she just happens to be slightly better, slightly better, and she can't handle it.
She can't handle it at all.
Here's another thing that you writers came up with that I love, which is the reference to the Edgar Allan Poe Telltale Heart.
Right.
Yeah, we did a lot of research. Yeah. None of us had ever heard of him or that before. And this was really an eye opener.
Stretched yourself, thing.
I love that. I love that hitting the foot because that happens, you know, and it is the most annoying thing, you know.
Strangely, that looks simple to draw, but it's the type of thing that the animator has to actually sweat a bit. To make sure that you can see it. It happens
so
fast.
It's about timing.
It's about timing,
timing.
Oh, here, this is beautiful. Coming up is, I want to mention a wonderful piece of animation by David Silverman. And it's where Homer goes into his diatribe about the city fathers.
And that diatribe, by the way, was one of the things that George Meyer had.
Yes.
That's a very typical, that's the way George walks around thinking. It's not really that he wrote it. He really believes those.
And we just heard a Scarface.
I think that comes up later, doesn't it?
Here it is.
Uh-huh. Hello.
All right, pal. Where'd you get the sugar for that tea?
I nicked it when you let your guard down for that split second. And I'd do it again. Goodbye.
You see, Marge? You see?
Homer, when are you going to give up this crazy sugar scheme?
Never!
This is David Silverman, by the way.
I can't live the button-down life like you. I want it all. The terrifying lows, the dizzying highs.
This is the George Myers happening here, yeah.
I might offend a few of the blue notes.
And by the way, an incredible performance by Dan over here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I just copied what George Meyer did.
You can't see it, folks, but Dan is actually miming what Homer's doing right now. In the studio.
Well, all of David Silverman's acting here is inspired by Dan's performance.
Well, he heard the track. And he rushed to me. He's my supervisor. He said, I want to do that.
And yeah,
said,
it was that funny. And
please take it. And he threw in about 100 poses. And the funny thing is, if you stop on the poses, they're not on model. They're really kind of distorted, but in a jazzy kind of way. And it's just funny. David is a brilliant cartoonist. And
it is funny. And then, but even before we got there, when I was directing this in the studio with Dan, I was on the floor with Dan's performance of this. I mean, Dan just... You know, he just took it right in. And it's that it's the perfect combination of what a collaboration this is.
Dan?
A collaborative effort where you have, you know, it starts out with great writing by Mike, by George, and then we have these fantastic actors that take it to the next level, and that inspires our great animators to take it to another level. It's just, you know, that's what's so pleasurable about working on this show. It's just we get to work with the top people from top to bottom, except for the following name.
And we're humble.
All right, they edit it out. Every time I try to list the people who suck, and the lawyers come in and stop it.
Now she comes out of her house, we spray her with the hose, soaking her from head to toe, leaving us relatively dry.
Relatively?
Well, there's bound to be some splashback.
Bart, her being wet won't help me win the competition.
Well... We could just sabotage her diorama, humiliating her in front of the students and faculty.
Now, I have a question. Is Bart left-handed because you are, Matt? Is that a tribute to you?
Yeah, that's my tribute to myself. yeah, actually, yeah, I thought, you know, I felt bad enough about being left-handed, you know, growing up. So
I'm left-handed too, and it's fantastic
it was actually
irritant
based on
to
Merkin.
Make you
is
funny and feel like an outsider and be angry and to hurt other people. It's great. This, by the way, is a fantastic combination of these two guys. It's Harry and Hank. Hank is obviously doing... our good friend who we just talked about, Batman.
Yeah.
I don't exactly know who Harry's doing, but it's a perfect foil.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. The bees are leaving.
No! My sugar is melting! Melting! Oh, what a world!
Dan, I had a question for you regarding that City Fathers. How many takes would it take you to get that?
At that time, I think we did about anywhere from 4 to 8 takes.
Yeah, but it was probably an average of about 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. And Dan, this is the kind of thing that Dan gets really, really fast, and he was excited about it, right?
He's a totally one-take wonder.
Oh, sometimes it takes me a while to get all, especially some speech like that.
I love Homer's quick mood swings that Dan always nails, and in that previous scene, he was on the ground sobbing that his pile of sugar was melting, and Homer, Marge says, I'm sorry. He goes, that's okay, Marge.
I like the mood swings that Dan does in the middle of sentences. You know, it's like three. You know, you can go through 3 major emotions in the course of a short sentence.
And you hurt yourself doing that.
The plastic over the kids pulling it up so they didn't get the wrath of the grapes. That's a reference to Gallagher, who was a huge influence on The Simpsons.
He's been referred to a number of times.
It's true.
Oh, I love his Bart's diversion.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, it's Bart!
Hey, he's doing stuff!
And you'll notice that Milhouse's glasses are messed up from that jump off the dam.
I love
this is an accurate show.
David, that is brilliant that you came up with
that. You know,
that.
I'm
That's
telling
so
you,
good.
This show is accurate. Everything you see here, children, you can survive jumping off a dam.
Mess up your glasses, though. Get away from the FBI. Be ready with the ribbon.
But Bart's diversion was absolutely perfect, and he continues to be.
Yeah, I love Dante's voices here.
Allison, is this supposed to be some kind of joke?
I didn't do that. I made a different one.
And by the way, you can hear again, Winona was wonderful. She was very comfortable. A lot of actors, you know, not right away are comfortable just doing, voice acting. But she was right into it, and she did a great performance very, very quickly for us.
Hey, Mike Scully, did you come up with the Telltale Heart concept in this? Or
I don't think so. I was actually trying to think of who it was. For some reason, I'm remembering Brent Forrester, but I could be dead wrong on that. No, I am dead wrong. He wasn't even on the show then.
But it's hard to get Brent Forrester out of your mind. It's like, you know, it's, you wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat.
That was a Matt tear.
I mean, I think I hear something. Why, here's Allison's real diorama. He got misplaced. Or so it would seem.
Oh, well, that changes everything. Mm-hmm. Let's have a look. Get the ribbon ready. Oh, a little sterile.
And again, you know, what I love about the structure of The Simpsons and what we always try and do is whatever you expect to happen doesn't happen, which is that even when this gets fixed, she still doesn't win. Mm-hmm. And then you think Lisa's going to win, and then Lisa gets screwed too, and she doesn't win. Nobody wins. The person that wins is the person that doesn't deserve to win.
Well,
and that's what
likely.
Life is about, and that's what we're trying to point out, you know, is that you're going to get screwed, and that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
You know, don't be upset. Just think how funny it is, that how unfair life is. It's hilarious.
Chewy, they're all here. What do you think?
I think it's lunchtime.
We have a winner!
Yay! I'm really sorry about what I did, Allison. It's no shame being second to you.
Thank you, Lisa. You know, I'm actually kind of glad I lost. Now I know losing isn't the end of the world. Hey, you still think we can be friends?
The great thing is Lisa and Allison, you know, became friends, and we saw them in hundreds of episodes after this.
This line coming up is probably the most often quoted Ralph line, I think.
My cat's,
Yeah, it is very funny. I for some reason, Greg Daniels jumps into my mind for this, but I might be wrong.
You could be right.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then I've taken a lot of credit falsely.
What do you mean? I bet.
Did you come up with it?
That's sounding familiar.
You know, it's very possible Mike came up with it. You know, with all the other talk.
No, I'll give it to Greg. I think you're right.
No.
But all the other talk.
I rarely do this.
Yes.
I thought of that.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well.
I think neither of us believe that, but let's. It's okay. All right. I can't remember.
Brent Forrester was
there. Why would I take credit for that?
No,
I was sitting in the corner, and I wasn't even pitching a line, actually.
You were talking about your chat, and we said we could use that. That's right. No,
I don't remember. I think maybe. I woke up, and I heard the line, so maybe I thought I said it. I'm backtracking very quickly.
We all came up with it. Everybody
else did. Exactly. Well, I came up with the pronoun.
Take care, everybody. Drive safely.